speaking of sports, which we rarely do on this program, we had the opportunity over the weekend to sit down with one of the premier African-American sports writers and sports commentators in this country, Michael Wilbon, formerly sports writer with the Washington Post, the host, a co-host of Pardon the Interruption, PTI, on ESPN. Also covers basketball, but he's very passionate about baseball. And baseball is why he came to IUPUI over the weekend to talk at a seminar about the importance of baseball to civil rights and civil rights to baseball. And we caught up with him before his lecture.
Michael Wilbon is one of the most premier sports journalists, not just African-American sports journalists, but sports journalists in our country, here in Indianapolis to talk about the impact African-Americans made in baseball, the history of baseball, to civil rights. First of all, welcome back to Indianapolis. And this is a little unusual because usually when you're here, you're covering the Pacers or your Final Four or a Super Bowl or what have you. What brings you here to IUPUI?
Well, I could say the Pacers still tomorrow against OKC, but I'm not going to say that because it's really talk about baseball. Mm-hmm. And its place in the civil rights movement. Also, you're wrapping around that, the anniversary, the 40th anniversary of Henry Aaron's historically significant home run, 715, to pass Babe Ruth, and some other things. But you know, it all sort of pulls together. I mean, the start of baseball obviously has been in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, the black participation levels in Major League Baseball are a discussion nationally. And so why not here, where I think the longest running Negro League baseball effort took place with the Indianapolis Clowns, the only team to play from the 20s through the into the 80s. And I realize those last years were more sort of a Globetrotter-like sideshow and not competitively, but still a very important city to the history of black folks in baseball.
What does baseball need to do to re-energize itself in African-American communities? And I raised the question because I was privileged about 2 weeks ago to interview on our program what's called the Douglas Park Little League. 50 years old. They're a little league that has a pipeline directly into, if the kids do well, they could end up in Williamsport on ABC and ESPN. So it is an official little league. And there, and these brothers have been working with it for a number of years. They're keeping that legacy. Is it that baseball needs to find out, first of all, how many of those legacy black little leagues are around and try to nurture them and support them and lift them up?
Well, baseball's problem is even bigger than that. The first thing baseball's got to do is start to appeal to youngsters of all colors. And let's face it, the sport is struggling in that vein because we just saw stories last week about somebody proposing that baseball reduce to 7 innings because everything is so fast-paced and it takes too long and they're worried about kids of any color paying attention. Being interested. That wasn't something that you and I had to deal with growing up on the south side of Chicago with baseball, two teams. You could watch them all day and you didn't care how long it took. Well, that's a problem now. And then beyond that, the Little League issue for African-American children. And, you know, in the park that we grew up around, West Chatham Park, I don't think there's a Little League program there anymore. And there certainly was when I was growing up, and Ernie Banks Ford helped sponsor it. Well, that's not the case anymore. And as I go around the country, I once went out during the riots in the early 90s to Los Angeles, to Southern California, to actually look at what was happening to historic Little League programs in African-American communities. What happened to them? You know what happened? They went away. And I had Crips and Bloods telling me that when those programs went away, they went to knives and guns instead of gloves and balls. And it was scary. It's scary to make that sort of correlation. And, you know, Major League Baseball has done a lot, largely through Jimmy Lee Solomon, who's not there anymore, to instill these programs, to create and then implement these programs all over the country. But I think the problem may be bigger than any of that. I mean, the problem is what we choose to find exciting. And, I don't know that Major League Baseball still is going to have to redouble its efforts because you're looking at the talent pool shrinking. You can't have that. But some of that's our community in terms of what, I guarantee you this, there's no shortage of AAU basketball teams. There's no shortage of bitty basketball in our communities, but there is a baseball and they both cost about the same.
And there's no exciting African-American baseball figure. There's no Bo Jackson. When I saw the 30 by 30 on ESPN of Bo's history, it just brought back to me, oh, my goodness, what he did. But there isn't that person anymore.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Justin Upton is pretty exciting. Is he Bo Jackson? No, but then there wasn't a Bo Jackson 15 years before that.
Right.
I think it's what even guys who grew up in baseball. Baseball is our first love. You and I haven't had this conversation. I'm going to presume it's your first love. I know it had to be because of the age and where we grew up and what we valued as a larger subculture at the time. What we found exciting, there might be players out there. What about Kemp? You know, I know he was hurt most of last year, but, you know, the Dodgers, as always, seems lead the way with terms of people of color, players of color. Well, how exciting, he's not African-American, Yasiel Puig, but again, a man of color, how exciting are these players vis-a-vis LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Derrick Rose when healthy? How exciting are those players when compared to players in other sports, to RG3, to Russell Wilson, to Colin Kaepernick? How exciting are they? Well, we now have sort of decided they're not exciting enough. I don't know what that means. I don't know how you counteract that.
A couple of things that have nothing to do with baseball, but they do have something to do with sports. Bill Roden in the New York Times wrote in connection with the Final Four the paucity of African-American coaches that right now are in college basketball. A brother wins the NCAA, the coach of Connecticut. That does not mitigate what Bill Roden talked about.
No. But I think everything's relative.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason you don't have the iconic coach, John Thompson, John Chaney, even to some extent Nolan Richardson, is that you didn't have coaches. You don't have guys now having to build it and sustain it in the way that those men did, which is good news that you can have an African-American coach in Connecticut hand-picked by his sort of white godfather. How about we've reached a point now where
the white guy mentored
and picked him. Said, no, there's no interview process. He's got the job.
Mm-hmm.
We are now part of that network in college basketball to some extent. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, it's like pro basketball. But the fact that Kevin Ollie could be the recipient of that kind of respect, that's a new place to be in college basketball. I think it's a pretty good place.
All right, you know, the whole country's talking about the Pacers. We're going hot and cold. Is this something where your team is so young, you start out quick, and you forget it's a long season and the playoffs are longer?
Nah, they're not that young anymore. They're not that young. They went to game seven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've gone first round, second round, third round. They went from, you know, deep in the series in the second round to game seven of the conference finals last year. No, they're not too young. And David West has been around. They got smart guys. This is confounding. They have smart, capable, veteran players. They're not knuckleheads. You know, when they might have introduced a knucklehead, but that's another story. But that locker room, there's so many things with the Pacers. I didn't like the trading of Danny Granger because he meant so much to certain guys on that team, including the best player, Paul George. You know, Lance Stephenson seems to have, you know, gone through a little moonwalk. I mean, so you start adding up these little things for a team that has not broken through yet, and you start to wonder, hey, what the hell's going on here? Can they get it back? I don't know. I think there are a lot of people presuming that, okay, the playoffs are here, they'll get it back. I think that might be a flawed construct for both the Pacers and the Heat if they don't get Dwayne Wade back.
Final question. This city has hosted one of the great Super Bowls that everybody talks about. We do great on Final Fours. We do great on swimming championships and all kind of stuff. We have not had an NBA All-Star game in a long, long time. Do we have the capability to do it, or is the All-Star game become too street for a town like this?
For Naptown is too street for Naptown to get an All-Star game?
It is odd to some of us that the powers that be haven't bid on that. And we got one of the best basketball arenas to play it.
My favorite arena. But Chicago hasn't had an All-Star game since 1988 as well. I think that these things move away despite what the NFL is doing from colder cities. Because people don't want to go to these cold cities. They want to go to Miami and Phoenix and
Los Angeles. Want to play golf. Okay.
Right. Well, you know, New York is coming.
Yeah.
But I don't know that, I will tell you this, the traffic that accompanies an NBA All-Star game for 3 days, I know the Indianapolis wants that. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the powers that be took a look at some other cities. Mm-hmm. I mean, other big San Francisco, parts of it got paralyzed with the All-Star game, and the game was over in Oakland. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the social elements of it. Vegas, the airport was overwhelmed in a way that not even a Super Bowl does, because it's, you know, I call All-Star Weekend Black Thanksgiving. That is my phrase for what happens culturally to a city. It changes. It morphs. And so I don't know that Indianapolis wants it. I don't know that I would want it unless I really had some human resources that are out of this world in order to have the crowds that come, that descend on your city. Atlanta couldn't handle it. Atlanta had it. Did not work out well.
In Atlanta.
Didn't work out well.
Chocolate City.
It was very chocolate that weekend.
See, at least that's a more honest answer than I get from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Michael Wilbon, it's good to see you. Get ready for hopefully the NBA Finals, and if not, Final Four next year, because my staff has this bet of you and I walking in through Circle Center and seeing how many people yell at me and how many people yell at you.
You might yell at me some bad things you don't want yelled at you.
Oh, trust me, I've had some of those yelled at me too. Michael Wilbon, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.